Hi, Mark. Welcome back to the studio.
G'day, Rod. How are you?
Very, very well, thanks. How much of the work of the Trust is directed towards wetlands?
Well, we work on all things biodiversity related, but it's fair to say that wetlands are probably, given where we work between Melbourne and Adelaide particularly, as our focal area, wetlands are a dominant feature in the landscape. So they probably, as far as our public profile and what we really try to push with people, they do make up probably the majority of our public effort, I suppose, and our discretionary effort, even though we work on all things biodiversity related. So yes, they're a big deal for us.
So why are wetlands important?
Well, where do you start?
I suppose my intro might give some of that away.
It certainly does, and that really covers often a lot of those issues. In our region, you know, wetlands are really related to the sustainability of our water resources. You know, they're a window on our aquifers, they recharge our aquifers, as well as all those other biological sort of functions. It's a very practical, fundamental driver of our economy in the region is our water and our water resources and our water table. And our wetlands are really the top part of that aquifer expresses itself at the surface, and the wetlands are the part that we see. So actually they give us they're a bit like the canary in the mine. They're a good indicator of the health of our water resources generally.
Yeah, not only our water resources generally, but what about global warming? Do they have a place to play in global warming?
They certainly do, particularly our peat-dominated wetlands. And people will be aware in our region, those, you know, I guess that's a way of thinking of, you know, wetlands tend to have a higher proportion of carbon in them than other soil types. But when you get into our permanently inundated wetlands, and we have some of those that are spring-fed, people think about along the coast, places like Eight Mile Creek and Ewan's Ponds and Piccaninny Ponds, but also some areas inland where the ground never dries out, you end up with these peat wetlands, which are, and peat is not a true soil, it's a sediment, which is made up of organic material, which is the vegetation as it collapses into the water doesn't break down, or at least not very quickly, and that forms peat. Now, that's the coal of the future when it gets buried in the ground.
A few million years' time.
Exactly. the reality is that those wetlands in particular, disproportionately high amount of our soil carbon is in peat wetlands, and we have a lot of those in the region. So where we can restore peat wetlands in particular and rehydrate them or put the water back in them, that can make a big difference, because otherwise that carbon is going to end up in the atmosphere eventually through oxidation or the breakdown of that material. Because once you drain it, of course, it starts to oxidise, and that process can be accelerated if you have a bushfire go through and burn that peat, for instance, then you end up with a lot going up in one event, even when that's not happening. And this is one of the reasons, of course, that peat wetlands, people may not be aware, but when a big system like Eight Mile Creek swamp was drained in the 1940s, it had to be redrained 10 years later because you have so much loss of volume of the ground that those initial drains had to be deepened to keep up with the process of collapse as that sediment, because it's just organic material as it collapses. And this process continues today. So there's a lot of drain maintenance is because of that subsidence of the ground surface level in peat wetlands.
Well, today is World Wetlands Day, but you have something of an announcement to make, I believe.
Oh, we do. It's pretty exciting for us because it's been several years in the making, because just in the last few days we've had the final stage of a land donation go through just down on the coast south of Mount Gambier, an area we're going to be calling the Hutt Bay Wetland. This is literally just a short drive out to the west from Port Macdonald along the coast, right next door to the Finger Point Water Treatment Plant. Lovely family, the Thompsons, Robert and Deborah Thompson, who are members of the local landcare group down there, have been for a long time. And they came in and started speaking to me, golly, must be 5 or 6 years ago, with a dream for what they would like to see happen to their wetland down there, their portion of it. They own about half of the, or did own about half of the wetland down there at Hutt Bay, and had been working towards restoration of that wetland because there were 2 artificial outlets to the sea. One's been blocked now and one's been partially regulated for several years. And they've been so happy with how that responded, and they could see the potential for this area. And beyond their time, they were thinking, how do we make sure that this area is preserved? And, you know, we're just so privileged that people like the Thompsons came to us at Nature Glenelg Trust and said, can you help us work towards a way of finding a solution for this area? And it takes a while to work these things out. And when, in this case, a land donation is involved and doing that in stages to make sure that it works for everybody and in terms of timing, second stage has literally just happened. And, you know, here we are with a new 150-odd hectare reserve on the coast for Nature Glenelg Trust, which is just amazing news for us and so exciting to be able to announce it today on World Wetlands Day. And look, for us, it's so nice too, because this is an area that the Thompsons have a family connection to, going back to, look, the first parcel that Robert's great-grandfather purchased down there, I think, was about 1880, so very long family connection to the area. And our connection with the Thompsons and their connection to the land doesn't have to end with this transfer, because the sort of organisation we are, they know they can stay involved. We're going to continue to talk to them about the place and really take on board their knowledge of the area in developing our plans for what happens next. And we're really fascinated and interested in the European history of these areas that we take on. We like to include that in our, you know, when we're documenting the history of a site, it's actually a really important thing for us to understand too, is, well, where's this site come from and how's it changed? And it's part of what we do that I enjoy most, is getting to know people, you know, like the Thompsons, and working with them towards a goal that's bigger than any of us individually.
So, Mark, what sort of country is Hutt Bay Wetland?
Well, it's actually really quite interesting wetland feature, because, and looking back at the very oldest survey descriptions of the property, they confirm that we had permanent freshwater springs actually at one end, up the finger point end of the property. They were marked on a map that the surveyor drew in the 1880s, with falling water tables. They no longer flow year-round, but there's still a patch of what some people refer to as freshwater tea tree, or blue or woolly tea tree. So that's up the eastern end of the wetland, and then that freshwater spills down to the west and into a more of a low-lying, broad, flat area with cutting grass, and it's slightly more saline in character, and particularly this time of year as the wetland's been drying out and evapoconcentrating. Different attributes. So, yeah, as far as the sort of habitats that provides, really interesting mixture of fresh conditions and roosting habitat in this taller tea tree up one end, and ranging out into a more open wetland feature with better sort of open water habitat for other waterfowl and frogs and fish and that sort of thing. So a really interesting mixture of habitats. And then on the coastal side, of course, the dune country as well. We'll probably try and have a day out there a bit later in the year. When we come to our winter spring, we'll have a day down there and invite the community to come down and see what the place is all about, and I think they'll be very pleased. I spend a lot of time with my interest in the coastal springs looking at particularly that zone of coastland over the years between Carpenter Rocks and the border. And it might surprise people to know now but if we were to cast our eye back, you know, 200 years, we had largely bare, open, drifting dunes, which is interesting. They're now clothed in this sort of coastal scrub. It wasn't like that when Europeans first arrived. And that was probably driven by a number of things. A major factor in that is Aboriginal occupation. So that was very densely occupied and utilised section of coastline by Aboriginal people, very productive area of coastline. Behind that, we had this semi-continuous chain of wetlands that ran the whole way around there, fed by springs and with very few natural outlets to the sea, which is why all that water was impounded behind the dunes. And then inland of that, native grasslands and woodlands. Now, European settlers came along, of course, tried to make a go of the land, and grazing was the main land use. So some of the very first drainage works in the region were done down at Port Macdonald to get water out to make it possible to get traffic from Mount Gambier to the coast, because there was a swamp that had to be crossed there. That pattern continued, so that there were cuttings made in all the swamps all the way around the coast south of Mount Gambier. And so it's completely changed the nature of the landscape down there. Now there's a few places, Piccaninny Ponds and Pick Swamp next door to it, all now part of the one park. There's been some regulation work done to lift the water level in those swamps again. And there's a little bit of work's been done at the top of a drain called Jerusalem Creek, which is between Piccaninny Ponds and Port Macdonald, and the other side of Port Macdonald to the west. This is really the only other system on the coast where there's been some work done to restore the water levels in one of these wetlands. And those two outlets that come out of the Hutt Bay wetland, one was blocked in about 2006, and the other one's been regulated since about 2009-10. There's a little bit more work we can potentially do there to lift water levels a bit higher. But the net effect of that has been incredible improvement in the condition of that wetland, the bird life that's returned, and there's certainly some more things we can do down there in terms of revegetation and maybe adjusting water levels further. But the Thompsons have been so pleased with the response that they've had. And fortunately for us, they had enough other country to the north and high ground that they've been able to run that balance of country to still work for them. But they've reached that point now where they decided that really the best thing for the coastal country and the wetland was to try and make sure that it was never going to go backwards again in the future.
Mark, congratulations and well done to the Nature Glenelg Trust in managing such a wonderfully diverse ecosystem that we experience down here. And I suppose we should say thank you very much to Deb and Rob Thompson for their
absolutely
donation, for their incredible generosity. Mark Backman, who is Principal Ecologist and Manager of the Nature Glenelg Trust, congratulations.
Thanks very much for having me.